Hi, everyone. It's Ryan Hoover, your host of Product Hunt Radio, where I'm joined by the founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. Today, I'm joined by two product leaders from one of the most successful companies in this mobile generation. Brian Norgaard and Jeff Morris Jr. joined Tinder in 2015 and are partly responsible for thousands of future Tinder babies, I'm sure. Brian is the chief product officer at Tinder and investor in companies like Lyft, SpaceX, and AngelList. Prior to joining Tinder, he founded and sold multiple startups, including Chill, Adley, and Nuru. Jeff is the director of revenue at Tinder, and one of my favorite qualities about Jeff is his enthusiastic curiosity and eagerness to build. You may have seen some of his side projects on Product Hunt from way back in the day. Jeff is also an investor. He's invested in Lyft, CryptoKitties, and Particle, Brat, and others as well. Today's show is for those that love product. We talk about the thought process behind Tinder's newest features, the underrated importance of building fun products, and the cease and desist that Jeff received after launching his first product on Product Hunt. Fun story. But before I jump in, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Airtable. Airtable is an all-in-one collaboration platform that's flexible enough to keep up with the most creative, innovative teams. Whether you're launching a startup, building a product, collecting user feedback, or even recording a podcast. That's why startups like Lambda School and Omni use Airtable to manage their work. In fact, I also use Airtable myself to manage my portfolio of investments, making it easy to track and update on my laptop or mobile phone. Visit airtable.com/producthunt today to get $50 in free credit. We're happy to have Intercom as a sponsor of the show, a tool we've used at Product Hunt since the beginning. Once upon a time, when Product Hunt first started, I would monitor our Intercom dashboard to see who was signing up and visiting the site in real time. It was super fun to see the diversity of people across the world joining every single day. As people signed up, I reached out one by one, introducing myself in hopes to create a memorable first impression. Intercom made this easy to do with its in-app messaging, and while this isn't the most scalable strategy, people responded very positively. It helped really create a memorable impression and helped build that early community. Today, we use Intercom at a much bigger scale, answering questions and reaching out to people for feedback as we're building and launching new features. So if you're building a community or really any product with users, you can do this too. Check out intercom.com. So this is Ryan here in LA with Brian and Jeff, two people who I've known now a while that work at Tinder. How you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Doing great.
Nice. We're sitting in Brian's house, actually, in his, I don't know, do you call this the library?
Something like that.
Yeah. It's nice. It's cozy.
Beautiful cozy space. I feel like we need a glass of whiskey or something.
We do, but it's not even noon yet.
that is true. That
it is
true.
Friday, though.
Jeff has a lot of good ideas.
Yeah. Can you guys both quickly give a kind of a quick background of kind of your path to Tinder and maybe what you do at Tinder?
Sure, I'll kick off. Ryan, thanks for having us on. You know, big believer in Product Hunt since day zero, and congratulations on your success. You know, learned a lot from the community, and hopefully we can share a lot today. I'm an entrepreneur and an investor. I'm the chief product officer at Tinder. I've been here for now over 4 years. I was the first acquisition of the company and was fortunate enough to work with Sean Rad, who's the founder of Tinder and a brilliant product mind. And him and I have been collaborating for well over a decade and, you know, incredibly fortunate to be involved in this sort of unbelievable ride and, you know, hope that it keeps going.
Yeah. And I remember Chill
yes.
before Tinder. Actually, can you give a quick background of what Chill was? Because this was, I think, pre-Product Hunt days, back when I was still, of course, playing with products and everything. Chill was super interesting.
Yeah, you know, so we were really excited about consumer video. And this is obviously before YouTube, you know, took over the world. It was still a huge experience, but the hole that I saw was social video. And so we'd experimented quite a bit with building ways to share video within the Facebook open graph. Some of you may remember Facebook had somewhat of an open platform at one point. We were, I think, one of the largest apps in the world, in that world. And, you know, it was just really interesting exploration. Learned a lot about network effects and competing with them, which is difficult. Also learned about the economics of content, first party content versus stuff that obviously you'd pull onto the platform. But we, you know, I honed a lot of skills at Chill. And I think Chill was sort of served as the starting point for me to think about incentives, consumer psychology, and really how to build great products.
How'd you get into Tinder, Jeff?
Yeah, so I joined in 2015. Originally came in to focus on retention, kind of set up a lot of our CRM infrastructure. But before that, really, and Ryan, you know how we got to know each other is through Product Hunt. So there was a period of time I was at a company called Zarly, left there and was building a lot of products and launched, I think, 3 products within 3 months that finished number one on Product Hunt. And then that kind of like really got my, I'd say my product career like started because I was getting a lot of job offers, a lot of interest in terms of what I was building. And so I think part of that was Tinder saw some of the products I was building and approached me. Now focus on the director of product and revenue at Tinder and focus solely on kind of subscriptions, a la carte products. But I do credit Product Hunt a lot with the evolution of kind of my product career.
I didn't realize that. That's the first time you said that. And it's for the audience, I did not tell him to say that. But
we all met on Product Hunt.
Yeah, I guess so. I've met a lot of people through Product Hunt, actually. And sometimes I forget that. I actually forgot how we first met.
Yeah, my
Jeff.
First product was, it was Slack chats. So it was...
Yes.
I was digging around the internet. I was finding all these kind of public interests, like AOL chat room style Slack groups. But there wasn't a directory. And Slack didn't want that to exist because they were so focused on enterprise. So actually released Slack chats, crazy success. Slack sent me a cease and desist.
Did they?
And
that's when you know you're doing something right.
Yeah.
So they sent me the letter. Lawyers were emailing me. I was having a little bit of fun with it because I thought I was getting interest for something I built. Like that's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
So they made me shut down the site and they sent me a pair of socks. Slack socks. It was Product Hunt. That was the kind of origins for me.
Yeah. Slack chats. I remember that now. It's an interesting trend because there's so many companies and people who are trying to build communities and using Slack as a vehicle for doing so. But obviously Slack is not built for mass scale communities. Like they're building communication for teams and companies. So it's like a really interesting trend. And how have you seen other people, other companies building similar types of communities? I mean, we see it also in Discord and other ways, but I just find it a fascinating space.
You know, you see Discord, Telegram's a great example right now. I'm in probably five or six different crypto groups on Telegram alone.
Some of them are insane with 20,000 plus people. I don't know how people even use it.
Exactly. And then actually Greg Eisenberg, who you guys both know, had a great quote where he was saying, iMessage is just the next killer app. Like the amount of group chats I'm in, you know, do you need to join a new platform to have that type of interaction? For me personally, like a lot of it just happens on iMessage.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing is this is not a new phenomenon. You follow the traffic anywhere. Things happen. A bunch of people aggregate. You find ways to give them unique value. You reduce the friction because they're already there. This has been going on since essentially, you know, for a couple hundred years, since the newspaper business. So Slack is a great tool and it has a lot of efficiency, and it's not a surprise that all of these micro communities are emerging. And, you know, I think you see the same, obviously, with iMessage and WhatsApp and Telegram, and, you know, the list goes on, but follow the traffic because you can build interesting things on top of people.
Did you hang out in IRC back in the day?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's super nostalgic for me because it's from my perception, it seems that I lived in chat rooms and a lot of it was in IRC and in AIM also at the time.
My favorite feature of all time is the away message.
Yeah.
It is the coolest, most radical feature, and it's so simple. And I would hope to God that someone can find a way to bring that back.
Yeah. The whole concept of status, I think, like what I'm doing now is also interesting. Twitter is probably a similar example, but it's also mixed in with a lot of like articles and news and things like that. Not
yeah, I mean,
I'm
the persistence right piece has sort of killed the away message, but I think someone could do a really cool product around it.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some ideas for you, for anyone listening out there. Let's go back to Tinder real quick. So you announced and launched in some countries, Tinder Places. What is Tinder Places?
About a week ago, we launched Tinder Places in 3 countries. Tinder Places is a location product, as it may sound. You know, a lot of people think of Tinder as a location app, which it is. It shows you people around you. What we wanted to do and what we aspired to do is add richness and texture to that. And, you know, I think first off, let me give a couple shout outs. We have a couple incredible product designers on it. Brooke Hollenbaugh, who's our designer, and then Sam Stevens, who's the PM. So 2 females approached location from a female perspective, saying, how do I make this interesting? How do I make this rich? How do I make, how do I drive utility out of
it? How do you make it not creepy?
How do you make it not
sure
creepy?
Part of the,
yeah, that's
the
a
assessment.
Huge, that's an absolutely huge part of the equation. Yeah. So, you know, we've been working on this product for a very long time, just the thinking and sort of working through all of the logic of how it would work and what are the implications. And Sean Rad, Jonathan Bedeen, Andrew Rudman, everyone on the team has spent, I would say, too long thinking about this product. But so what it netted out to is what we thought was the interesting question is who goes to the same places I go to? Where you go tells a lot about yourself. And it's a story. What gyms you go to, what coffee shops you visit, what bookstores, these are really important signals. And at Tinder, Jeff will, I think, sort of elaborate on this. We don't believe in anything that isn't simple, fun, or useful. We don't want to create a ton of work for individuals. We don't want to create a ton of headache and cruft. So we set out to build a product that was very, very simple to use, but had all of these sort of privacy leanings first. I saw a tweet the other day that said, like, can't believe to the extent at which Tinder went with places, you know, to try to get this right. So first off, it's opt-in, 100% opt-in. So, you know, you can turn it on, you can turn it off at any point. Every single place is also opt-in or opt-out. And you can also delete a place if you don't want to see it.
So you mean the location?
The location. Say, for example, it registers my gym, Equinox Gym. I don't want to be shown there. I can immediately opt out. And so we started with this idea, and also something really important. It's not real time. It's not showing where you are right now. Obviously, that would be, you know, that would be to a lot of people perceived as very creepy. Some people have asked for the feature, but it is not real time. So rolled all up, it shows you this sort of tapestry of where you've been over the last month. And we think that that's really, really powerful. And it's an incredible signal about finding and discovering new people. Because, you know, I think contrary to popular belief of opposites attract, like likes like. You know, it's, there's a high, high probability if you go to Phil's Coffee that you might find someone interesting there. So, you know, that compatible value system, wrapped with a bunch of really, really cool technology and, you know, what we think is a pretty simple interface is the Places product. And we're always evolving it. We're always taking user feedback. And, you know, we're really excited because it's an ambitious product. Overlaying sort of Tinder on top of the real world is a very, very big idea and one that is going to sort of take a lot of time to get right. But also, I think we're uniquely positioned to do something important and local because of our intent. You followed this for the last decade. So many people have attacked how to get at local, how to do it in a meaningful way. And we take a ton of inspiration from Foursquare, who's actually our data partner. They did, as we know, like,
we have ridiculous accuracy right now.
Ridiculous accuracy. And it's built on many years of, you know, like a really rich corpus of data. And so we've worked with them. But I also think, forget the data for a second. Like, Foursquare was I think one of the most memorable local experiences I've ever had in terms of, you know, on my smartphone. But we looked at it. We looked at, you know, obviously our DNA is different than Foursquare, and we tried to build a product that was simple, fun, and useful for our customers. So really excited, super early.
This is giving me flashbacks to Highlight. I think when did Highlight launch?
That was 2012, I want to say. I was living in New York at the time, and it was, for about a month or two, that was the most radical, cool app that you could possibly imagine.
Special shout out that was my 10th grade lab partner, Paul Davidson, was the founder of
Really?
Highlight.
Yep. Really? So I saw Paul recently, and it hasn't been announced. And after this episode probably airs, it will be. But anyway, he's in the family, in the Product Hunt AngelList family here. But yeah, Paul is a really talented product thinker. And what they attempted was pretty radical. It's like, especially at that time, to broadcast your location and share it with effectively random strangers around you is pretty crazy.
It was. Like, my best story from Highlight is I was a younger entrepreneur. I didn't have that much access to people. And I love products that kind of democratize access to people, similar to Twitter. And I was in New York and I saw Dave Morin posted a Highlight probably a half a mile from me. And I responded to him just not expecting a response. And he said, come over to the Ace Hotel on 23rd and 6th. And I met him over there and we grabbed coffee. And I was like sitting with, it's like a big person who you shouldn't be having coffee with at that time in your career. But those products just kind of blow your mind when you actually meet someone in person because of a digital product that can change your life. And I think that's part of the reason we both love working at Tinder is that kind of opportunity that we give people to actually meet in person.
One last thing, right, about the Tinder Places concept is, you know, at the core, Tinder is really a serendipity engine. You don't know what you're, you know, it's one of the few.
Exact word I was in my brain.
Oh, interesting. It's one of the few experiences, and this was, you know, someone mentioned this to me on a podcast. They said it's one of the few experiences where you're actually leaning forward to meet someone you don't know. You know, this is not a celebrity, or you're not, you know, this isn't someone in your family or an intimate, you know, iMessage group with your buddies. This is something where you actually are trying to find someone you don't know. And so you add the layer of the real world on top of that. Things get really interesting. Now, where it goes, no one knows. I mean, this is all about adoption and, you know, perception and also the technology. It's got to work. So, you know, all things that Jeff and I worry about every day.
Yeah, there's this category of products that are, I don't know how you describe them, but the word serendipity comes to mind. And some of them are very much explicit serendipity. I would say Tinder is more explicit in that you open up the app with the intent to discover and find someone and connect with someone, but you don't know who. Whereas like Twitter is also a serendipity engine too, but in a different way. I think a lot of my friends and a lot of my teammates actually have met originally through Twitter. And that's how like we probably connected at first, was like through Product Hunt and Twitter. Same, like that's how we this is maybe the second time we've met, Brian, but we've communicated on Twitter all the time. So it's like there's an interesting category. I find that space fascinating.
Totally. I'll give you a really quick story about how Twitter changed my life. Similar thing. So I mentioned Zarly was a company that started in 2011. The founder put out a tweet around 2 a.m. saying they were looking to hire their first marketer, and it was a growth marketing role. I responded at 2 a.m., wrote an insane cover letter that same night, was on a call with him the next day. This is all from Twitter.
Wow.
He offered me a job on a Skype interview and said, we
that
want to hire
or the next
the same day.
Okay.
And wow. He said, you have to start tomorrow, which was also crazy. And I said, okay.
Nice timeline.
I said, where is your office expecting to be in San Francisco where I was living at the time? And he said, I'm in Kansas City. Will you move here? And I got on a plane. This is a very true story. Packed my bags, got on a plane, moved to Kansas City. Didn't go back to San Francisco for 9 months, was just living in Kansas City with Bo Fishback, who you know, Brian. But that was all from Twitter within like 48 hours. You're on an airplane going to Kansas City, which I'd never been to. I didn't know if it was Kansas or Missouri. I thought I was going to Kansas City, Kansas. Turns out I was living in Missouri. But again,
I got to blow Jeff up a little bit. He also went bike riding with Lance Armstrong because of Twitter.
Whoa,
so
what?
I like to respond to people who I shouldn't be talking to. Like I like pushing the line. Like I'll email people I shouldn't email. And I don't care if they email me back. It's just like 1 in 100 responses could change your life.
Yeah.
And so I saw Lance Armstrong at my hotel in Hawaii, and I tweeted him jokingly, hey, Lance, I'm at your hotel. I'd love to go for a bike ride. And he DM'd me and said, hey, we're going out tomorrow, 6:30, join us. And I was running a bike, and suddenly I was on the road the next day with Lance Armstrong riding around Hawaii. That's but epic. Just this idea that like you, if you just reach out to people, you know, 1 in 100 responses might be enough to change your life. So just like put yourself out there a little bit more.
And that's why again, I love Twitter because it opens up these serendipitous opportunities like that. It's certainly changed my life. And in fact, Product Hunt would not exist without Twitter, I'm certain of, because it's not only how we sort of seeded and built the network, but since Twitter is public, it was the easiest, most effective way to reach the makers of these products. So the moment a product is on there, like how do we get the people who made it to come in and answer questions and engage in the community? There's really no other place to do so but Twitter. That's quick and real time.
Everyone always asks if your favorites are real or not.
They're real. the bio says so. Do not use robots.
No, but you were the CEO, still the CEO of Product Hunt, and you respond to so many people who are reaching out to you from all over the world. And that creates a connection where these people feel loyal to Product Hunt, really, and to you. And that effort goes a really long way, I feel like.
There's something I would like to add that, you know, is maybe sort of a context on general product building, but I think with a shade or a nod to Product Hunt, which is there was always a very positive vibe. Sure, there are teardowns, And sure, there are comments where, you know, someone is less than nice or favorable about something. But generally speaking, I always felt like it was a neutral and shade towards positive sort of dialogue, which is sort of rare on the internet. The public internet is, as we know, can be a very nasty place. But like that was engendered, you built that into your community as a feature. And there was a lot of positivity. And I think when I think of Product Hunt, that's one of the first variables or virtues that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. And that's unique. That's hard to do. You know how much work that took. I think it's a really, really powerful thing.
Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, it comes in the form of, I mean, there's, and I won't go into the rabbit hole, but there's a lot of product decisions and design decisions.
I mean, that was intentional.
Very intentional.
People probably don't think that, but it's fully intentional.
Yeah, even the kitty is part of that, honestly. It's very, very subtle, but when you visit a website and you see a ridiculous looking cat wearing Google Glass in 2018, it creates a sense of friendliness and positivity, even without using those words. So yeah, there's a lot of like subtle things that we took intention there. Stick around to the end of this episode for a mini interview with Marian Wu, president of GE Ventures. We talked about how GE Ventures is investing in the future of startups. Starting a business is hard. Accepting money shouldn't be. That's why Product Hunt is built on Stripe. In the early days, before we had a real team or any funding, we spent way more time than anticipated trying to figure out how to collect payments from our customers. We cobbled together a bunch of different solutions, but the end result wasn't professional, our accounting was messy, and even worse, it was a terrible experience for our users. Then we switched to Stripe. Integration was easy, and we started collecting money from people around the world without janky redirects or a lot of friction. Today, we use Stripe to collect subscription revenue from makers and startups around the world using Ship. Their web dashboard makes it really easy for anyone on the team to create new SKUs or discounts for customers without writing a single line of code. Whether you're building a marketplace, a SaaS company, or a subscription product, Stripe makes it easier to get paid. They also make it easier to get started with Stripe Atlas. Founders all over the world can incorporate a new business, set up a bank account, and access everything they need to get running in just a few clicks. If you want to start a business and make money on the internet, check out stripe.com. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about products or apps or things that you use or you love that other people don't know, like anything. Could be the shoes you wear. It could be an app on your home screen. What do you want to talk about?
There's a lot of things that inspire me. And I think one of the problems we have today as a technology industry is we get so focused on products purely in our lane. You know, this messenger is like this, so we have to be like that. You get a lot of this sort of copycat syndrome. People aren't really thinking for themselves. So, you know, what I try to do is sort of get out of my head and look at the world around me and say, what's fun? What's interesting? And back to sort of Tinder, simple, fun, and useful. I look at these these products from my childhood, super soakers, water balloons, slime, like fun things that are playful and, you know, bright colors that make you laugh. Like these are all things that seem sort of, benign or maybe even stupid, but they certainly influence a lot of decisions that I make because I think, you know, Jeff can speak to this as well and we can talk about our product philosophy. I mean, the first thing is that when you're asking for people's time and you're asking for their attention, you have to be very clear and it better not be work. And if it is work, it better fit into their payoff. It better fit into their routine. We were talking the other day about how simple running is. It's this rhythm, right? But it's very important to build products that fit into people's rhythms of life. And it's hard to do, especially with the competition on mobile and the, you know, what is there now? 2 million apps.
Yeah.
You really have to think long and hard about consumer psychology, consumer behavior. But I always go back to like, what's fun? What is fun? And that really starts to shape how I think about building products. And I think we go through these cycles, right? Where, you know, things get boring for a while and then all of a sudden someone brings fun back for just a minute. You know, I remember the first time I opened up HQ Trivia about 6 months ago. It was probably the third game they've ever did. And I just went, thank you, Russ, for bringing fun back. Like, you know, whether I'm a retained user or not is not the point. The point is that, you know, there was some live and there was some big heavy animations and there was some jokes from some guy in, you know, New York that I've never met before, but it was a great.
It felt fresh too.
It felt fresh and it still
fresh,
is.
Fresh is a hard thing because since there are so many products and people over time start to get jaded, it's really hard to build a product that feels fresh.
But Russ is a very independent thinker. He's not going to look for inspiration to build a trivia site. He's not going to look at Jeopardy and try to map Jeopardy to mobile. And it never works that way, even though everyone tries, right? Everyone says, okay, here is the proxy. Let's take it, let's copy it, and let's put it into the form factor of whatever piece of technology exists today at scale. He is not that guy. Like, he will tell you straight to your face, I don't like that idea. That's not me, or that's not how we would do it. And you roll that up, and you get this like incredible sort of dopamine firing experience. And I think people like him, and you know, I encourage everyone else in the audience, like, don't be afraid to take these risks from a product perspective. No one wants another copycat product in any category. You think about what's succeeding today. It is always things that make you, they pause you for 1 minute. I call it the sort of wrist twist where you take your phone and you sort of, you twist your wrist just enough where your friend or whomever you're sitting next to can see the screen and you go, look at this thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this blog post that a guy named Pascal wrote about animations, and he's building a company around a tool around animations. And he dissects and compares different approaches to animation within product design. And sometimes we've all seen it where a designer takes it a little bit too far and there's a little bit too much balance in this prompt, or they just go way overboard and extreme when it comes to animation. And his whole point in the article is to be thoughtful and intentional around how you use animation to express emotion. And a lot of times it's not really overt, or it's very subtle actually in how some of these products and Tinder's, you know, OG Tinder, it's been 3 years since I've used Tinder. Unfortunately, I just don't have a use case for it. Fortunately, I should say, I don't have a use case for it, but I used it a lot back in the day. And the subtleties of how the cards move and how they match with your finger. In some ways, I wonder if you used a very sterile approach, if it was more of a next button, I don't think Tinder would actually work. It's something about the fun and the feeling of swiping that card and having it kind of match to your thumb that makes it feel fun and also very responsive. I'm not sure if you agree with that entirely.
Totally. I think so. A couple products come to mind where animation's been interesting. So there's a product called Boost, which we have. And the idea is you boost your profile and you get seen by more people within a 30-minute time period. And so when your boost starts, you start seeing these faces flying across the screen in hearts. And these are people who are seeing your profile making a decision on you at that moment. But it just livens up the product and adds so much excitement. I like animations in unexpected places. So, and what I mean by that is we have animations on our paywalls. Like, paywalls are supposed to be static.
Shimmers, Jeff, shimmers.
We have shimmers. So we have when you tilt the phone, the gyroscope on your phone gives a gold shimmer when you're tilting the phone. And this is on paywalls. We love that detail. I think Brian and I both have kind of a slightly artistic bent. Definitely, like, craftsmanship is a part of our backgrounds. And so we take a lot of pride in everything. And yeah, I think it shows.
To elaborate a little bit, just so to give the audience a little context on the Boost idea. I mean, Boost is one of the most successful, if not the most successful, consumables in the history of the industry. And, you know, the two folks that worked on it, Chris Lim and Andrew Rudman, I was sitting next to them when they showed me the version without an animation. And it was still a good product, but it was uninspiring. You add an animation in and you change the trajectory of, like, the entire, you know, our consumable business by using sort of, you know, motion and using this idea, again, of encapsulating a little fun. Is it a little gratuitous? Sure. And a little bit, you know, maybe a little heavy-handed? Fine. But it gives you the feeling of life. And I think one of the things that people want out of products is products that make people feel alive are products that people pay attention to. Teslas. You know, why do you buy a Tesla? So you can show off that acceleration. I mean, you buy it for the battery as well. But these are these, like, simple little things that I think people forget, which is we all, you know, work hard. We have our own struggles. And I think things that make just brighten your day up just a little bit go a long, long way. And I think you nailed it, though. You have to do it in a way that is subtle. You know, I think of animations a lot like color. If everything is in neon,
yeah, then
it's a tough life.
Unless it's the 80s.
Unless it's the 80s.
So I have a short Shimmer story. So first startup I joined was called Garage Games, which rebranded to Instant Action. Long story short, we were building technology to allow companies and game creators to embed games on the web. So pretty innovative at the time. This is 2009, 2010. And one of the games that we worked on, it was embeddable in Facebook and embeddable in blogs. And people would go to the site and they'd see essentially like a kind of like an image of the game with a big play button. And so that was the first version. We launched it and we saw very low click-through rate. Like nobody was clicking the play button. And we're like, what the hell? Why is no one clicking this? And so we had a couple ideas. One of them was adding a shimmer to the play button. And when we did that, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it increased click-through rates 2 or 3x. And it was incredibly subtle. And the realization was that there wasn't enough attention. It didn't look enough like it was foreign to people. They weren't used to playing a game in a browser like that. And the subtle animation of a shimmer button drew attention to that button, which also communicated the sense of animation gaming. So there was a connection there. And so it was a good learning experience for me. Like even the most subtle things can have a dramatic impact on a product like that. Is there anything that you want to plug or anything at Tinder coming down the pipe that you can talk about?
We're always, so one of the things that I take a lot of pride in is we have a tremendous team, tremendous product team, a very high product metabolism. So we're always testing new ideas, new features, some big like places, some small that, most people wouldn't recognize. But I think one of the things that we're just extremely focused on today is still what got us here, which is keeping things simple, keeping things fun and bright. And really, really trying to make, fulfill on that promise. I mean, we're an introductions app. We get you introductions. Some people, are looking for a fun night out. Some people are looking for, someone to explore a city with, to get coffee. There's a lot of reasons why people use Tinder. And what's so inspiring is not only the team that we work with each day, but the fact that, like, this is truly one of those, I say this with all humility, one of those iconic, like, global, like, it just did its own thing. It became its own thing. And to be involved and be inside of something with like a true network effect behind it is it's a humbling, humbling thing. And, I think we're committed to our customer like we have been for 5 years. And, this is something that we wake up every day with passion to just stay in line with our virtues and, enjoy the ride.
Do you know how many Tinder babies there are out there?
I've been asked the question a lot, and I do not know, but my guess is it's probably right up there with the Catholic Church.
Yeah. Nice.
To Brian's point, one thing I think a lot about is being able to break our own rules. So we've set up these rules for what Tinder is, and what I'm constantly thinking about is how can we evolve with our customer? How can we do things that make us uncomfortable at Tinder to the point where we're not getting comfortable with the current product, making challenging decisions, and I'm always thinking about what are the rules of Tinder and how can we break them, and see if our customer actually wants that new version of Tinder, and so that's what I'm thinking about right now.
That takes a lot of courage. I mean, we saw how long did it take for all of our favorite app to double their character count, a decade or longer. People kind of joke about that, but there was a lot of cognitive weight that came with that and a lot of things that had impact on. And I think one of the things that you forget when you build products that are at scale or you're building on top of scale is there are downstream impacts that are, profound, sometimes good and sometimes bad. And this is the challenge of any product designer, right? Which is to have thought through those big challenges. And I think, as Jeff said, it takes a ton of courage, though, to sort of wake up in the morning and want to reinvent yourself, especially when you have tens of millions of users, but we're still passionate about it.
Yeah. I mean, we actually think about that at Product Hunt as well, because there are expectations now that people have of Product Hunt, a way that it works. And there are things that we would like to change, but there is always a risk of if you dramatically change how the homepage works, for example, that could kill the site. That could kill the community. It could cause an uproar. At the same time, there may be a better way of doing how we're doing things right now. So that's something that we internally struggle with. And part of what we've attempted or what we're actually doing right now that hasn't been released is actually creating separate side products essentially that build on top of what we have, rather than dramatically changing the core fundamental part of what works today. So
there's one way to think about this is a little more academic, but I think it'd probably be helpful for the audience. There's kind of, I think of this as a striation. There's not new, there's new, and there's feels new. And, you know, you have to think about sort of where your product is in the life cycle and which one of these sort of verticals or these lanes you fit in. And you think about a brand like Nike. I was talking to the CEO of Tinder about this a few days ago, and we were saying, Nike is not new. We all know that, but you know what? It sure feels new because they're always reinventing. They're always thinking through color and texture and the things that, you know, keep Johnny Ive up at night. And the end result is a product where it's continually challenging people. Like, you know, sometimes you'll see a Nike and you'll say, wait, that's a Nike? But that is core to their belief system. If they weren't thinking like that, they would be LA Gear.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, we're like everybody else. We're aspiring to try to sort of, I would say, not copy that ethic, but understand it and try to leverage it.
Cool. Well, thanks for having me. This was
fun.
Thank
you for having
us. Thank you.
Yeah. Talk soon.
Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Hi, Marian. Thanks for joining us on Product Hunt Radio, and thanks to GE Ventures for making this possible. GE Ventures is investing in the new industrial revolution, and that means Marianne works with all kinds of startups solving under-the-radar business problems. Within GE Ventures and within the Business Innovations division of GE, how do you think about the unique advantage you have when it comes to selling entrepreneurs?
Our investing leads by background are really financial investors. The senior team all came out of institutional VC. We're really experienced venture investors that understand how to partner with startups to make them successful.
How do you think about your differentiator or unique value add as GE Ventures?
The part that's differentiated, again, goes back to the capabilities and strengths of GE. When we look at healthcare, when we look at energy, when we look at drones, for example, and aviation and flight, and when we look at manufacturing, GE is leaders in each of those industries. We're a leader in energy. 1/3 of the world's energy is produced on GE systems. We're a leader in healthcare. We're the leading imaging company across the healthcare system. And we're leading in aviation and jet engines. We have tremendous credibility in the industries that we are focused on. So that credibility can be useful to startup companies. We can be great customers for them. We can be go-to-market channels for them. We can be development and engineering partners for them.
And what's the future of GE Ventures when you look down next 2-3 years?
We're really at the beginning of this big trend around digital disruption into these traditional industries. We're really at the beginning of a new model around corporate innovation. And I think GE is pushing the boundary on both of those fronts.
Thanks again, GE Ventures, for making this interview possible. GE Ventures invests in startups that develop transformational technologies to solve big problems. Visit ge.com/ventures to learn more.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, share the podcast with your friends on Twitter and tag a guest you'd like to hear in a future episode. See you soon.